My name's Irene Revel. I'm hosting this week's edition of Enemies of Good Art. This week's discussion will be on the question of feminism in contemporary art today. Last year, the Pompidou in Paris rehung more than the whole floor of their permanent collection with work only by women, much of which they'd recently acquired in a conscious decision to expand the number of female artists in their collection. In the past few years, we've seen a resurgence of interest in the feminist art of the 1970s, with major retrospectives such as the WAC exhibition, which showed the work of over 100 women artists associated with second wave feminism, and which was commissioned by LA MoCA. And in Berlin, the REACT Feminism exhibition, which was another survey of 60s and 70s feminist performance art. It seems that from a point maybe 5 years ago when feminist work tended to be treated marginally, it's become for at least a short while something of a fashion trend. We will discuss what this means for the status of women in the art world more generally. Why is it that there is still a vast discrepancy between the numbers of female students at art school and the number of solo shows by female artists at the Tate, for instance? Is it the responsibility of large institutions like the Pompidou to take action? Or will real change only come from the grassroots? Is the situation for women making careers in art really any different from any other profession? Or is it just a much larger problem? I'm joined here in the studio by Catherine Grant, who's a lecturer at the Courtauld Institute in Goldsmiths. Her research interests include the representation of adolescence and femininity in photography, the theorization of spectatorship and identification in relation to the photographic portrait, histories of feminism, and the intersection between queer theory and feminism. We also have Jude Kelly, who's the artistic director of the South Bank Centre. In addition, she's on the culture board for the 2012 Olympic Games here in London and comes from a long career in the theatre, having previously been director of the Battersea Arts Centre and the West Yorkshire Playhouse. Martina Maloney, who previous listeners may know as one of the founders of Enemies of Good Art, is a fine artist whose practice explores the notion of community and the disappearance of civil associations. And I'm Irene Revel, and I'm the co-director of London commissioning agency Electra. Jude, I'd like to start with you. I wonder what your reaction to the Pompidou is. And I know at the South Bank you're spearheading a project called World of Women. Women of the World. Maybe you can talk a bit about that.
Okay, well, yes. Wow. Women of the World. I decided that as a senior woman in the arts, I noticed that over at least 20 years, something that I had as a support system for me as a young woman artist, which was a coterie and then a brigade of women committed to the idea of equality, not just for women artists, but for women generally, I noticed that that brigade had receded, were less obvious, less vocal, and I suddenly realised that I wasn't giving the support to younger women about the experiences that they would still find in terms of inequality issues and celebrating stories. So I decided to launch WOW next year. And in launching WOW, I suppose I was acknowledging that it's very easy for women, when they've secured a position in the establishment, to think that they did it on their own merits, and also to try to avoid being kind of pinpointed as somebody who is hysterical or angry or victim or hard done by, the sour grapes, any of those words that get attributed to women when they rightly complain that we haven't yet achieved equal rights. And I felt that as a woman artist, I needed to acknowledge the fact that there are still so few women at a senior level, or indeed at a sort of middle range level, in all art forms. And just to finish, I did a year's research with a whole group of professionals, the law, health, police, army, everybody, about downward mobility in British society, not just for women, but for men and women. And so much of it was because people only give opportunities to people they know. And as the class system separates and segregates, people you know become just the people around you. And if you think about that from a woman's point of view, it means that you're still exacerbating all the time the people you know being basically a group of men who know each other. And I think that has to be spoken about.
So how will the festival, what kind of form will it take?
Well, it's 3 days, the 11th, 12th and 13th of March. It's worth noticing that that is the 100th anniversary of International Women's Day that week, on the 8th of March. So that weekend, I'm phrasing it as a celebration. I've called it WOW because you just think, wow, women are amazing. I mean, considering they have so many obstacles, don't they do extraordinary things? So the weekend will gather together women of all kinds. It's not just artists, women. It's women in science. It's women in enterprise. It's women in care. Looking at what stories we want to tell each other about what's been achieved. So in that respect, I think it's very celebratory. And there'll be music, there'll be film, there'll be dance, there'll be all kinds of things. And then there'll be lots of talks and debates, speed dating for women, dragon's dens for women, lots of different kind of ideas like that. And women coming in from other parts of the world to talk about the stories that they are engaged in. It's not a culture of complaint weekend, but on the other hand, I'm also not afraid for people to acknowledge where differentiation still exists, where discrimination still exists, and get some sort of female muscle around the idea of feeling that it's okay for us all to talk about it, and actually we need to support each other to do so for our sake and also for our children's sake, boys and girls.
Maybe leading on from that, Catherine, you've been writing, I think, about rethinking the model of younger artists, younger female artists, relation to older female artists, and the idea of fandom. Do you think that it's very important for younger women to encounter the work of older women, particularly?
I think it's very important, and what I'm interested in is why it's become increasingly important for younger women artists. My career as a student at university and then becoming a lecturer myself, I've seen the kind of interest in feminism, particularly second wave feminism, kind of wane and then rise. And so that's something I've been very interested in thinking about, and thinking about what second wave feminism gives the present. What is it about second wave feminism that younger women artists and male artists are responding to? What is the fantasy of perhaps a collective, you know, a scene of a group of women, I think is quite important to the idea of second wave feminism. That a number of artists have been picking up. And for me, this wasn't really about a mother-daughter relationship. And I found that that kind of generational model often stopped conversation, because there was a sense that being a daughter would have to mean in some way being infantilized or being rebellious. And I think there are aspects of generational tension and different historical moments that are very important, but they're so various, it's hard to put them as one kind of feminist mother and one kind of feminist daughter and them being in relationship with each other. And instead, I started to think about the idea of being a fan of feminism, because that personally applies to me. It's something that I've always been, I suppose, since I read The Female Eunuch at age 17, and it always seemed relevant to me, and I've struggled for many years why other people didn't find it relevant, but also came to understand that my interest might be seen as marginal, slightly strange, slightly not of this time. And so for me, it's been a very welcome recurrence of feminism in contemporary art and contemporary culture to some extent, but to think of it as a kind of a fan object is to think about what the fan does to that fan object, what is lacking in the fan object that the fan needs to change. So I've been thinking about an idea that one of the key theorists of fandom is a guy called Henry Jenkins, and he theorises things like rewriting science fiction to present the stories that you can't actually find in a series like Star Trek. So the kind of homoerotic
like
couplings,
slash fiction
yeah. between Spock and Kirk, for example. Mm. And he uses the term of these fan writers as being rogue readers. They read what they want to find in the fan object and acknowledge its gaps and failures and blind spots, and then recreate those in the kind of image that they need. And I think for me, a number of contemporary artists who are mostly my peers, that's what they've been doing. And I've been looking at work by the American collective Lesbians to the Rescue, who started off as a small-scale zine. And just even the title, Lesbians to the Rescue, it kind of starts this thing like whack and wow, like this tongue-in-cheek acknowledgement that we need feminism.
Action heroes.
But to say that still sounds kind of slightly anachronistic, but the imperative is there behind it, but it's kind of using perhaps even some sort of feminist camp, you know, to kind of drive home a sense of needing to create this community. And since I have become interested in them, what's also intrigued me is they have had a lot of institutional support. So they've gone from a group of women working at the Whitney Independent Study Programme, basically students making a zine, asking friends for input, to now some of the members are, you know, showing everywhere their, you know, the zine is in the L Centre Pompidou catalogue, it's in the Modern Women catalogue at MoMA. You know, so there's an institutional need for this sense of community action as well. Mm. So all of these things have been kind of points of reference for me.
Mm-hmm. But then what about, what that sort of definitely appeals to a certain demographic, I suppose, but what about other women who perhaps can't identify with feminism? Martina, I know you were talking about how it took certain experiences for you to actually see yourself as a feminist.
Having a baby. And I have been ashamed of that in so much as for a long time, especially in my 20s, I didn't think that feminism was something I needed to engage with. And I remember having an argument with an older friend of mine. And she's, that might be about 15 year gap between us. And she was quite appalled that I didn't consider myself as a feminist and that every young woman didn't consider themselves as a feminist. Mm. And she strongly did. But I think somehow we... Our women of my generation who have not engaged with feminism, somehow we think that we're far ahead in the game than we actually are. And it struck me like I'd been hit with a wet fish over the head when I had a baby, because all of a sudden I found myself with this gorgeous, much longed for child, but quite isolated. And isolated in a way I couldn't have imagined. Like, culturally, things were closed to me. Not so much that I couldn't make work. Somehow I knew that there was always going to be a period of time by which I probably wouldn't have a strong desire to or be capable of, or indeed find the headspace to do so. But I wished that I longed to be able to take my tiny baby in her sling strapped to me to hear certain lectures that I wanted to go to. And the Tate and the ICA have been two favourite haunts of mine for a while. Nobody said I couldn't, but nobody said I could. And so I felt quite intimidated that I couldn't bring her in case she cried. And today, I just come from Troika Editions. It's a small photography organisation in Farringdon, on Farringdon Road, where they asked me, through Enemies of Good Art, to work with them, and I suggested a series of public lectures. So we invite photographers, artists, academics, thinkers to give a lecture on any subject of their choice. There's nothing particularly new about this. It goes on all the time in London. But we are the first place to advertise that you are welcome to bring your children and or small babies. 5 women came. We have an audience capacity of 20. It's not huge. But it's a good place to start because a full house makes everybody feel good. But 5 women came with their babies and the rest of the audience didn't have children with them. And it was wonderful. It was fantastic. One woman left and she said to me on the way out that she felt human again. She was able to engage publicly with intellectual thinking, and it made her feel very part of the system that she had always been part of again. And not having that, her child is about a year and a half. Not to be able to have access to that for a year and a half is quite something, and most people would take for granted. So I'm not sure if I've veered off the point there, but I'm reacting also to what Catherine was talking about in terms of activism, collective, and we see Enemies of Good Art as a movement, and we've been trying to, there's a little group of us that work on it, and we've been trying to get it off the ground in so much as that we change the culture somehow for women in London, so that, and I say women because, I do know some dads who are the main primary caregivers, who stay at home with their little ones and their girlfriends or wives go to work. But mostly it is women who are at home with children. And so therefore, for me, that's a feminist issue. Mm. And somehow the culture has to change.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, this word feminism? It means equal rights for women. That's what it means. And I can't really understand why that is such a loaded word. You know, feminism is an F word now for so many people. Racism isn't a bad word to have, but feminism is. So... Mm. I think that it's something about a successful campaign against the idea of women's rights, which came out of the very need to have women's rights. Mm. That campaign that kept going and saying women who place themselves in a kind of campaigning and activism state around women's rights are humourless, have their own problems, don't like men, all of these sort of these things which were the very basis of why one was complaining about it in the first place, stereotyping, marginalising, etc. That campaign has been reignited and has been tremendously successful. What young woman would want to align herself with the idea that she's A, a victim, B, unequal, and C, you know, if she says anything about it, a sort of a complainer and a shrill hysteric? No young woman's going to want to do that. And I think that as a result, when young women find themselves suddenly realising that, yes, they are objectified sexually, yes, they are discriminated against, yes, rape has become a kind of comedy word again, and yes, they will discover that they have not got equal pay. I mean, the other day I was giving a talk to headmistresses about this, and they said, you know, all the headmasters are paid more than them in the schools. So when young women find out that actually they are suffering from inequality, I think the fact that we've broken the link with something very simple called a feminist movement leaves them adrift, and it's not fair. So we've got to put it back together again, even though the very doing of that, I think, will bring about a lot of hostility. Because if people wanted an equal world, they would have sorted it out already. And some people clearly don't see the need, and probably it won't serve them to their advantage.
What I think about is interesting in contemporary art is there's movement from sort of both ends of the spectrum, both people like you, senior members of museums and cultural institutions, looking to put on exhibitions and events based around women or the feminist movement. But there's also a move for women artists to kind of reclaim or take hold of feminism themselves. And I think that's what makes this moment particularly interesting. Rather than it being kind of a top-down kind of pointing the finger and saying, look, you young women, you have to become feminists. Because that never works. And I also think that when you're kind of full of possibility as a young student, you don't necessarily see inequalities, you don't necessarily experience them. And for me, what has been interesting about looking at younger women artists is the way they take their sense of possibility and use that as a political platform rather than a sense of suppression or oppression. And in a way, they come to politics from a different point of view and then can address issues such as childcare or kind of inequality of pay or even a sort of a disinterest in issues of the body and gender, which you still often find is like a blanket refusal of anything like that being important, and kind of activating it with a sense of humour and a kind of a sense of play that makes it difficult to kind of just reject it as being hysterical or not part of my universe. If it's actually something that's sort of inclusive and sort of fun, like, you know, just setting up lectures in which you can bring children rather than just talking about, oh, it's such a shame we can't bring our kids to this, that and the other, actually doing something that creates a platform or a stage in which to create the kind of communities that we want to live in is something that I've been really kind of impressed about seeing in the last few years, in art at least.
Well, I was going to say that there's a woman working with me on WOW called Pam Giddy, who was involved in something called the Power Report, which basically tracked around Britain who held power and whether they knew they held power. And some of it was obvious power, as in, you know, sort of jobs that where you had a clear leadership framework. But some of it was actually the woman who ran the local startup club or the youth club or whatever. And there were so many instances of women around the country exerting power and influence, but from a position of, you know, not really being acknowledged, not understanding how powerful they were. And there's something about mobilising a lot of those women, or at least just making them understand how critical they are. If we're going to have a big society, it's women that are going to provide the glue. And I think bringing women back into this arena together, where they can say, isn't it marvellous that we do what we do? Isn't it wonderful that we actually have all of these knowledges about, you know, juggling time, multitasking, all the things that women are forced to do or are good at. Something about that's got to be celebrated and made humorous. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about with culture is that we have very traditional models still in Hollywood. Most young people are watching Hollywood films, most in terms of filmmaking, and similarly they're watching television programs that follow Hollywood models, etc. And there's a wonderful women's film collective called Bird's Eye View that, and they told me about this test, and this is something for listeners. It's called the Bechdel test, and you have to look at the films, or the television programmes, right? And are there two or more women in it that have names other than mum? If there are two or more women, or even, you know, do they talk to each other? And if they do talk to each other about something, are they talking about something other than a man? And if you do that test, you'll be shocked by how women appear in terms of the action of the world, not just in action films either. And, you know, if you put that against how the internet is creating a supply of pornography, if you put that against, you know, what you do when you look on the television at who has power in Parliament, how can you help your sons or your partners to feel as if this is a world where they need to respect and think about women as equal? Mm. And I think that's a big problem, actually, yeah. Which is that we're sort of letting things carry on as norms, thinking that other people will look at them and sort of go, yes, but that's not really what it's like. But why will they say that if everything around them says, no, that is what it's like?
Feels like it's almost a paradigm shift in thinking and thinking about roles that's needed, because, you know, for instance, if motherhood was different, perceived differently in general, then and it was common to take your child to a lecture, no one would bat an eyelid at having a small child noise in the back of the lecture. So that would be normal. Mm. It's only a disturbance because we're not used to it.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't just something about women either. It's would it be better in society if adults and children spent more time with each other in social places, in public places? I think the answer is definitely it would be better. Mm. Who could help make that a definite decision? Well, women could help make that happen. Speaking about, like, as in, let's not say this is a victim issue, but let's say this is a decision-making issue.
Yeah. Let's do something about it,
yes. And the same, you know, I know that, for example, in the area of microfinance, women are doing extraordinary things around the world because they are working at grassroots conditions about women. And let's collect those stories of entrepreneurialness and let's use those as models. So in WOW, you know, bringing over women from Liberia, bringing over women from South Africa who have created new models of enterprise. Let's say, well, that's a way to go. Not let's just discuss the victim side of it, but the positive issues around it.
But you've also got the problem of being a flexible worker that's very apparent in art and culture in Britain, and kind of not trying to feed into that too much as well. That's what I've kind of noticed is around the protests around tuition fees and cuts in university funding, there's been a group set up called Precarious Workers. And that's not a feminist group, but it's a sort of a current condition for kind of scholars of my generation, sort of early career scholars, in which you're often working on temporary contracts, on part-time contracts, and you don't have the kind of institutional security to kind of clear the space for yourself in which you could affect more changes around issues such as childcare. And I think, especially with David Cameron and the Big Society, one of my fears is the kind of model of flexible working will be a way of kind of cutting a lot of hours in people's jobs, and the kind of contemporary artists providing a service rather than object, and how you get paid for that is something that a number of artists have kind of worked around, like Andrea Fraser. And this is something that transcends gender but affects women disproportionately. I mean, I think there was a review of the spending cuts over the summer, and it affected something like, out of the percentage of people got affected by the cuts, it was 70% women, because they make up a large proportion of the public sector and also kind of part-time work. And so you've got this kind of celebration on the one hand with these big exhibitions around women, and then you've got the reality for a lot of women in the contemporary art world, as makers, commentators, writers, that is something that reflects a broader kind of issue, I think, around how, you know, how our work is valued generally under this new government, for me, which is something that's kind of taking the edge off some of the celebration. But it'd be interesting to hear what other people thought.
Well, we did a show on Big Society a couple of weeks ago, and we tried to get to the bottom of what Big Society was and how, in fact, women might support each other. And how we in some way could contribute to the idea of big society. And I'm laughing because I think big society is the biggest joke that we've had so far. But to use the rhetoric of good intention and to a degree love, that we might support each other and care for each other, I think is quite disgusting, because that isn't the intention behind big society, that we might create a more beautiful Britain for everyone to live in and feel valued and support each other and not be afraid of each other. Because in order for that to happen, the government would really have to let go and let us get on with things, and I can't quite see that happening. And also, there are massive cuts that you've just talked about, Catherine, and yes, they do. And it was on the news the other day on the I think it was the Today programme, that it does affect more women. So I'm concerned. I'm wondering how we've let it get to this stage. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, why have we let things carry on the way they have, and why have we not been more proactive? Why have we been so passive for the last 20 years?
Well, I think I'm not going to make you feel guilty, right?
But I feel guilty. I am guilty. I am guilty.
I think that women have chosen to divide and rule. Mm. You know, they've found it difficult to stand up and be counted, and then other women have said, "Well, I don't experience what you're. I don't see it from your point of view, so count me out." And by the time they want to count themselves back in again, then ground has been lost. And I just think that we have to come together as many generations, getting strength from each other. It's not about, you know, I've lived this life so I can tell you. But actually, the thing that prompted me to create WOW, which I'm really excited about, is really the number of younger women who came to me and said, I'm experiencing this, but I don't know who to hang on to. You know, was this what it was like for you? This is what it's like for me. And it was actually the reawakening of that sense of possibility that came from the younger women that made me think this is the time actually where we need to talk about these things. And why we've let it get to that stage, I think, is because we've been nervous of feeling that we shouldn't. Well, people have been trying to take part in the big 80s push for the meanness. And, you know, we've looked at statistics of women's education. We've looked at statistics of, you know, number of women in architectural college, in art college. And we thought, oh, well, it's 50-50. You know, more and more women going into surgery, et cetera, et cetera. The frightening thing is when you get out the other end of it and you suddenly think, OK, how many women architects actually are taking on great big projects around the world? Really few. Now, when people say, yes, but, you know, it's getting better, I can tell you that, you know, in the 1600s, several women ran most of the West End theatres. I mean, you know, you can go back in history and you can find out there have always been women architects, there have always been women film directors, there's always been women theatre directors. It's not, none of these things are new. It's always a question of how many get through the gate. And there's something stopping the idea of, you know, women becoming a 50% workforce, equally paid and equally understood. And in a way, I think you've got to go beyond sort of the idea of equal rights as it will come as a matter of progress, and think what's basically going on in terms of attitude to women. Because I still meet men in classical music who tell me that women can't really play the piano. Now, they're few and far between, but they do exist. I mean, of course they can play the piano, but they can never be as great a pianist as a man. I've met men conductors who also say that about women. They're very few and far between, but they still exist. And it's not right to say, well, this is a dinosaur approach, because, you know, all the time you have the whole of the world and you've got, you know, second generation women who are coming out of Latin America, where there might be still a very machismo culture, women coming out of Pakistan, very machismo culture. As those cultures move forward, those ingrained attitudes to women, they affect modern culture. So it's like you're redoing the battle over and over again.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Are we a little tired of having to redo the battle over and over again, banging on the same drum?
I think that if you've got something that is ingrained as two sexes that are opposite, then, and there's no third sex to be an arbitrator, then you have got to say, okay, well, you know, you've got to stand up for women, have got to stand up for women and accept the fact that, because we know, because I've got a boy and a girl, you know, if boys in the playground go, ugh, girls, that's not a feeling that goes away entirely. And it's a pity. And, you know, I don't think girls go, ugh, at boys in quite the same way. Or if they do, they sort of, you know, they get rid of that feeling. And I don't know whether that's cultural or whether it's biological or what, but whatever it is, it's no use pretending it's not there. And women have got to stand up for themselves, because the result in the if in the UK we let women's rights slip, and we have, how does that look if you're a woman in the Congo? How does that look if you're a woman in Iran? You know, what we might call as mild marginalisation in this country, in a democratic country, becomes a massive abyss in other countries, and it's an abyss that we're giving permission for. So even, you know, from the point of view of the world rights of women, the fact that we are so, you know, not, I was going to say pathetic, we're not pathetic, but I mean the fact that we're not working hard enough at our own story, I think we've got to take more responsibility.
Now, I think it's a difficulty of knowing what it is to do to make a difference, and kind of feeling that equality has been achieved on some levels, and it becomes more difficult to discern the moments of discrimination. I think that's what it is. And when does discrimination turn into moaning? I can feel this tension, especially, which is crystallised for some people around parenthood, you know, and how you integrate your child into your professional existence. It's something that requires you to reevaluate your notion of work. And for me, it's been really quite shocking, and I think it has been for you as well, this idea that you just have to continue working as if nothing has happened whilst you're still caring for this very small child. And if you're going to compete on an equal footing, you know, keeping equality in view, then you have to really kind of erase that presence of family in your life to kind of continue. And obviously people have integrated, you know, children into their professional existence very successfully, but it's not culturally accepted to a massive extent. You have to make your own steps to do that, or kind of hope you've got somebody above you who's sympathetic to that balance. And I mean, that's just one very practical way in which disproportionately women are affected. And I think that kind of idea of coming out of college where the students are still at a 50-50 kind of point, and then in the professions it starts to unbalance. It's also something about confidence or a will to kind of push yourself through, like a belief in yourself, that still seems to not quite be balanced between men and women. And maybe that feeds back to this kind of idea of the popular culture still propagating images of women as objects, which is so second wave, and it seems very strange that we're still having to return to these things, but they're still very deeply ingrained.
Like, as you were saying earlier, it's the 40th anniversary of Page Three in the Sun today. I mean, how it seems to me is there's a lot of, there's sort of a trickle down at every stage of the way. So one thing I always struggle with trying to understand is how, especially in art institutions, interns tend to be probably 95% female. And then if you look at curator level or directors, that's definitely not replicated there. So I wonder what's happening, like you said, along the way, confidence is somehow lost.
And people are pointing their own image. And there is this thing where people go, well, you know, she's great, but really, is she capable of being, you know, a leader? And I think that because women try to work consensually and therefore aren't lining themselves up to be the leader, then sometimes they don't give off the signals that they're going to be a leader. So there's a, you know, there's lots of things about, I suppose, you know, training oneself to think about the responsibility, not to push yourself forward because you have, you know, a major ego, but to push yourself forward because actually you have the experience and the knowledge that would do good for the world if you were in charge. And women have got to be talked about, you know, from those in those kinds of ways. I mean, I really think it's tremendously unhelpful to have things like The Apprentice and all the kind of, you know, the programs that suggest that bullying, yelling, swearing is the way that you're going to be a great leader. Because it's completely nonsense anyway, and it's not true. I mean, men don't lead well like that either. You know, it's a sort of entertainment fabrication like wrestling on television. In fact, it is really like wrestling, pretend fighting. But it doesn't help young people, because then women think, well, I've got to be like that, and I'm not.
Can I ask you, Jude, if you were in a management role when you had your children?
I was, yes. And do you know how I did it? Because I had a man who effectively, you know, took on so much of the role of being a house husband. I could not have done what I did without that. Mm. And I've often given talks to groups all over the place and saying, you know, you turn up and you've got this fantastic job and you've got done all these things that you've achieved and everything. That doesn't mean that you weren't crying at 8 o'clock in the morning as you tried to find your shoe under the bed, as you realised that, you know, you dropped your mascara in the toilet, as you forgot to buy the Pampers. I mean, all of the things. And then, you know, and of course, our public image is to say, well, no, that's fine. Look, I'm a marvellous multitasker. But the combination of a partner who's prepared for me to be that kind of person and that kind of career, and a lot of other people propping you up helps, doesn't it? And I don't think you can say that's a badge of pride. That's a force of circumstance. Mm. But it shouldn't have to be like that.
And it still is. I left the house one morning a couple of weeks ago wondering if I had put my dress on. And I walked down the street and I looked down. I did have my red dress on. I thought, thank Christ for that. But on the other hand, I just felt so hassled. And now I'm not in a management position and I'm teaching a half a day a week. But, you know, and I'm finding it very difficult to stay on top of things and actually try to get a movement off the ground, which is completely off our own bat. Mm. But it's that support system that you talk about that so many women in London don't have.
No, and there must be ways of doing it other than simply trying to find the right partner. I mean, and I think one of the, you know, it's a major problem, the cost of childcare. It's also a major problem, the sort of erratic nature of childcare. And we probably should be doing more things collectively to sort out childcare. For example, you've just said, you know, if there were places... You know, I remember the creche was a major part of cultural activity in the 80s, or early 70s, through the 80s. It completely disappeared. You don't see creches anymore. You know, you don't see Film Night Plus creche anymore, do you?
No.
So what happened to that?
Yeah, exactly what happened to that.
And I think this is, again, you know, not to keep plugging WOW, but I will, is because I want to examine some of these things and just see, look, they're very simple. Let's just begin them again. What's gone wrong?
Can we have a WOW creche so we can go and enjoy the festival?
Of course we'll have a WOW creche. We've got to have a WOW creche, haven't we?
We've got to.
Yeah. So we will have that too. Can I just say one more thing as well about, I think coming out as a female who's noticed that they're not equal is sometimes as difficult as coming out, you know, as a gay or lesbian. It's like I had to admit that I'm not like you. In fact, I think it's easier somehow to say, well, look, this is my sexuality and I'm proud of it, than to say, you know, I realise that I've not made my way in the world in a way that I'm completely secure about or proud of. Mm. That's a very difficult thing now for a young woman to say, because we've been given giving young women this word empowered, you know, are you empowered, you're empowered, etc. And I think they feel like they can't admit that they're actually not empowered.
And I think that's the big, big part of why so many women are struggling now with careers and particularly small children. And I think it's the... I did have a friend say to me when I talked about the public meetings that we began with Enemies of Good Art in public art spaces here in London. And she said, it's great that somebody is finally willing to talk about the fact that it's difficult. I'm so tired of trying to pretend that I'm a busy artist and I'm teaching and I'm running a small family and I want more kids, but I don't know when I'm going to be able to do that. And she said, I'm just tired of pretending it's all right, because it's not. And of course, she's, you know, like so many other young women who've contacted me since we started this nearly a year and a half ago, to say, finally, somebody wants to talk about this on an open platform and admit to the fact that, yes, it is a bit of a struggle. And it's not whinging, and it's not that we don't love our children, but it's that we, you know, this is a demographic of women who are highly educated to master's level and beyond. And so it's not satisfactory that you just stay at home all day with your child. It's not.
No. Theresa May gave a speech the other day when she launched her new, well, they cancelled what they call the Harman work, and they started another part of work. And I wasn't at the launch, but she said that they were going to use the word fair rather than equal. And she said it was because she felt that the word equal had become toxic and that people had a reaction to the word equal. It made them have... It was a negative reaction. And that if you use the word fair, then somehow people were more inclined to think about it. And I wonder what you all feel about this word, equal, as opposed to fair.
What's fair for you might not be fair for me. But what's equal for you would be equal for me, surely. What's wrong with equality?
Yeah, I mean, I just find it's kind of wordplay without a lot of action. I think for me that's what the problem is. I mean, using fair, using equal, I don't really mind as long as something actually is really kind of concretely discussed on how to change the kind of inequalities. And fairness, it's a very movable concept. So it's very useful for a politician.
Exactly.
Statistics can help to actually pinpoint problems in a different kind of way. But I mean, for me, it's perhaps in contemporary art, it's this issue of confidence that really intrigues me. Why are so many young women artists feeling confident to say that their work is feminist and to kind of engage with these issues kind of outside of some of the cultural issues we've just been talking about? Like when you're saying about it being the 40th anniversary of Page Three in The Sun, it makes me think of a young artist, Katie Horrocks, whose practice in part involves painting outfits over the naked ladies every day and then displaying that as a kind of a reworked archive. And it's these kind of small handmade gestures into the kind of everyday that I've found increasingly women artists are finding some kind of sense of, you know, direction in. And it's like, is that political? Is it just, you know, a play? It's something that I've been kind of, you know, mulling over, but it's different from just kind of saying that doesn't affect me at all and I'll just let that happen.
I'd like to respond to that. I think in terms of the word fairness, I think it's a bit of a new Lib Dem term that Nick Clegg thinks is the buzzword of the moment. And I think it has the potential to be dangerous for some people. But yes, of course, living in a fair society where things are fair is an ideal, that an aspirational one. But there's nothing wrong with the word equality in so much as there's nothing wrong with the word feminism and motherhood. And yet, why have they become words that somehow have certain negative connotations, all associated with the feminist movement? And that for me is worrying. And I think that's where I'm not afraid to say, well, I don't want to sit on the fence anymore. And I think that's probably where I know that you also, Jude, and the great work that you're doing with South Bank Centre and this upcoming festival, then it's time not to sit on the fence anymore.
Mm-hmm. I love the fact that women artists are, you know, collecting up and doing work. I think that's absolutely fantastic. There's some wonderful women musicians as well. I mean, if you think times are hard in terms of equality in the visual arts, you should try the rock industry. I mean, it is very, very interesting how somehow the most cutting edge and contemporary of our work, the industry behind that is often the most old fashioned of all. I find that fascinating. But I think that also, you know, you have a straightforward career issue, which is that if you get known for being part of a particular movement, then forever on, you're always, you know, called in to do radio programs or on television, or, you know, the articles they always bring you up in to discuss that. So, you know, you don't ever have to be brought in as a man. You can be whatever you like and always be a man. But, you know, if you start representing women, then you can find your career narrows, and that's fine if that's where you want to go. But it is something to be nervous of if you want to be a straightforward artist. Mm. Yeah.
But Catherine, you talk about a lack of confidence also among younger women and taking on certain issues to deal with women. I personally think that doesn't happen because it's not saleable. And Eleanor Carucci, who's joining us next week, you know, has a wonderful tale to tell about a piece of work that she made that her gallery wouldn't show for that reason. Her dealer wouldn't show. So
it's pictures of her pregnancy and then the birth of her twins. And there's a picture of her just post giving birth, and she'd had an emergency cesarean. So her body is very kind of wrecked with the experience of just having given birth. And then she's also done very beautiful images of motherhood, breastfeeding, and kind of, you know,
her body looks beautiful.
Yeah, where she looks beautiful again. But because some of the images are really quite, you know, kind of shocking, I suppose, because we don't get to see these images of women in these kind of very intimate situations. And, you know, for her, that was a problem, you know, when she wants to show them in terms of her saleability. So It is amazing these issues still arise, but they do.
But there was a group show that might still be up in London at the Taschen Bookstore, and in their press release, and we did a show on the back of that, in their press release they say that the show was called Women in Photography in the UK. Mm. They say in the press release that they decided to avoid a decidedly female voice.
So what does that mean?
Women
so
artists avoiding female voice.
Yeah. So that means here are a group of competent, intelligent women artists who are capable of making work around political notions, social notions, conceptual ideas around art practice. They don't only have to photograph their bodies after they give birth, because that's what every woman does. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's insulting to other women, and it's insulting full stop. But I haven't spoken to any of the women who've taken part in the show, but the rehang at the Pompidou, then it's not branded as a particularly feminist standpoint.
Is that problematic, do you think? I mean, I think if you read more about it, it is. But do you think that makes it easier for the women involved to be part of it?
But why are they so? I mean, the press release is so flaky. It's why bother writing it? And this is the Pompidou's press release.
I think they're trying to satisfy many audiences, I think this is what comes into play here.
So if we say it's a feminist show, we say they're talking about issues around feminism. What, it puts the rest of the world off, and it's not a crowd puller then?
Well, I think they see that the art included is not all around feminist issues. So for them to, you know, you can easily read it as a feminist curatorial strategy, but a lot of the work is not talking about specifically feminist issues. So you get this issue of like, how do you broadcast what this show is about?
But this is an archetypal problem, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Which is that, again, if men are talking about things that affect them, then, you know, it isn't about maleness.
Mm. Exactly.
It's about the world. Mm-hmm. And some of that will be about violence, which is about the world, and some of it will be about the landscape, which is about the world. But if women take one of those things, the landscape, then that can be, you know, the world. But if they take violence, it will be women's issues. And I just think you have to keep restating the language from our own point of view. I actually do think it's helpful. I find it helpful to watch and look at collections of women's work, because I want to know what women are thinking about. And I love the Orange Prize. I think Kate Morris did a fantastic job launching the Orange Prize, not only to demonstrate that women were great novelists, which of course they are, to up the sales of women novelists, which is great for their bank balance, and why not? But it is interesting also reading the women's work, because yes, they cover vast changes and ideas, and you know, they're not all one thing, but there is the experience of women in the world that is particular and worth capturing. And I personally find it useful to see it all together sometimes, because it makes me understand how women are experiencing the world. It's not that they're separate from men, it's not that there's not overlap, but there are some particular things that women notice and how they notice them. And it's a pity that women find it sort of difficult to have that idea, because you know, I'm sure men don't erupt when they find out that there's 50 men being put together in an exhibition. In fact, they just think that's normal.
I have a question for Irene, if she doesn't mind. As a well-established and a strong commissioning agency for art in London, how do you feel the divide between and it's run also by two women? Do you think there's a fair divide in terms of how many male and female artists you work with?
Well, we tend to work with a lot of female artists. Particularly, we were quite well known for a large project called Her Noise, which included an exhibition at South London Gallery that was addressing questions of gender in sound art and experimental music. One thing I'd like to say is that I do think that there's a lot of responsibility with curators and commissioning agencies to think about who they're working with and research. And it, you know, it's very easy to pick from a sort of simple list of, you know, you can go to a biennial in a glamorous place and come back with a few names from there. But it's a lot, I think, to really change things, you have to really do research and try and find other people and more difficult practices. And so there is, I think there's definitely a responsibility there, as well as on all the different other levels we've talked about. Something I was going to ask you, actually, was maybe this isn't so much your role at the South Bank, but what sort of institutional strategy can somewhere like the South Bank have to change things? I mean, short of having an all-female
festival,
festival or rehab.
When I came in, I mean, obviously one of the things I did was review the exhibitions at the Haywood, and last year we had Annette Messager, and working with Ralph Rogoff, the curator there, we are aware and looking all the time about women artists. Mm. And I work with, I have heads of classical music, contemporary music, literature, dance, performance, and we're constantly actually saying, right, where are the women on this programme? And I'm all constantly saying to the publicists, there's no women on the front page here.
Fantastic.
I'm constantly doing that because it's so easy to actually, unless you're actively thinking about it, it's very easy for the women to get crowded out. And it's not acceptable. But you've got to work at it. Mm. And I'm not prepared any longer for people to sort of say, well, you know, they'll get there under their own merits. And if they're there, they're there. And if they're not, that's just the way of it. I just don't accept that anymore, because I've watched women lose esteem because you haven't actually supported them. And I think there are less women in leadership supporting women than there are men in leadership supporting men.
Mm. And I think for me that's a really key strategy in our contemporary culture. It's not necessarily having feminist content all the time, but feminist approaches to curation, to writing, to how you run a department, that you try and bring some of the values feminism is also feminisms as well. I mean, we've been talking about quite specific issues here that wouldn't necessarily be recognised by all feminists, but I think some sort of key issues of equality, visibility, collectivity are things that can be brought into pretty much any cultural activity and can kind of create more fairness or equality without necessarily having to have a feminist label on. And that seems to be one way of allowing more people purchase on the idea of feminism without necessarily always knowing it. Mm-hmm. I think that's one way people have been turned off. They see feminism as a ghetto that's there and they can be somewhere else and they don't have to touch it at all. Whereas for me, it's an integral part of everyday life and is part of a more general equality amongst society, whether that's about different kinds of identity category. But feminism is one operational within a broader spectrum rather than just kind of nurturing a feminist practice, which is difficult to define anyway.
I like to see women achieving things. Mm. And I'm excited about what women are achieving. I think they've got a huge amount to contribute to the world, and where they're contributing things to the world, I think we should learn from what they're doing, because they're often juggling obstacles that are just at least one, if not two, more than most men are. And I think it's great for men. I mean, I think we must include men in this discussion. Mm. You know, my partner, my son, my father, they don't want an unequal world. Mm. But they can't create that equality by themselves. Mm-hmm. They need people to all talk about it again. Mm-hmm. And we've had to raise the issue of racism on many occasions over and over again. And I think that, as I say, we have to keep raising this to the surface and discuss it as men and women over and over again.
Mm. Well, especially with big society, I think things are going to get more and more kind of compartmentalised and stratified as the divide between rich and poor, people with access to resources, people who don't. It's going to become more and more important to keep these kind of values
surface. By default, women might just become marginalised again because of the amount of flexibility they have to have, the low-paid jobs that they're in, the fact that they become invisible when they're behind a pushchair.
Yeah.
And, you know, that will then produce a set of role models that are fewer and fewer, and that affects women's confidence, because growing up they don't see images of success.
Mm. Does anyone have any, we're coming near the end, does anyone have any other thoughts?
Well, I mean, I suppose maybe we should end on an optimistic note. I mean, I kind of felt that having things like Elle at the Centre Pompidou maybe is a good thing, because so many students are going to go and see that exhibition. I mean, if I was taking a group to Paris, I'd definitely take them around there, and they wouldn't necessarily think, oh, this is just about women. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's a history of 20th century art there. that you can talk about with your students and then bring up issues of gender, which is a far cry from when I worked at the Women's Art Library and they had slide packs that they would send around to people who wanted to buy them to show
that women
history
didn't make art.
Of women in art. So we've gone from a slide pack of 24 slides, you know, in 1984 or something that I would still be sending out in kind of the late 90s to an entire floor of the Centre Pompidou thrown over to women artists. For me, that's something to be celebrated.
It's great, and it's great that it took them only 5 years to build up their collection, because they even say in their own press release that 5 years ago they wouldn't have been able to have that show. So, so yes, somebody has got their thinking hat on and actually done something about it, which is great. But on a positive note for me, I think it's wonderful that that so many women really want to engage with these issues now. And from my point of view, those women with babies, young babies who are trying to practice and also take care of their children. And on next, not next week's show, but the week after, we have a curator from London. She curates in one of the big institutions in London. And she's leaving her post so that she can spend more time with her child. As the institution goes through its transformation, she doesn't think that she's going to be able to give it what she thinks is needed of her. And so she has to make the decision. And so the decision is a liberating one, but nevertheless she loses the security of a steady income. And that women have to make those choices still is it's worth talking about. It's a bit of a tragedy, but maybe the good things can come from it, because she seems to be quite excited about talking about the issue that that brings up in itself then.
I think we'll talk more and more about these things with the big society and the political climate as it is, actually. That's my feeling, or hope, anyway.